Hello, welcome to the Gab and Jules show. This is Jules Robson. This is not Gabriele Marcotti, who is away at Istanbul for the Champions League draw.
Not holiday this time.
Not this time. No, he's taken too many already. But thank you so much for stepping in again.
No problem.
We've got a big show today. We will have plenty of quick hits. But we will start with Liverpool, because on Monday night, there was a painful defeat away at United, where nothing really went Liverpool's way, which is on the back of already a very difficult start of the season. So let's focus on them a little bit and try to understand how they got here and what maybe the solutions are. Stu, what do you make of the start of the season for Liverpool? What is going wrong?
Lack of intensity. Liverpool base their whole game plan, you know, whether it's closing down or when they win the ball back, get it in behind the opposition as quickly as possible. They do it better than anybody else in terms of winning the ball back in good areas and counter-attacking quickly, playing balls over the top. They play more percentage balls than probably any other team. And that's what they're good at doing. But if they drop their intensity by 5%, 10%, they've got a problem, because once that initial press or the midfield get bypassed, then they've got a back four that gamble, and I say that word, gamble on playing a high offside line. And if it gets broken, they make bad decisions. And they've got a fullback that doesn't want to defend and doesn't know how to defend. Yeah. So that's a major problem for them.
There's also a lot of injuries, and Klopp mentioned it before even the Fulham game, I think, the first game of the season, when he said this week of training was crazy, in the sense, like he said, he almost said, I think, like if there was a witch and players one after one.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, when you lose and Matip and then Konate, who's his replacement, when you lose Thiago Alcantara so early, when you don't have Jota, when Darwin Nunez gets sent off, when you've got all those problems, it doesn't help either, right?
No, of course it doesn't. Then he's also then got to question what he's been doing in pre-season, the intensity, how they were training. Did they train too hard? Did they not train quite hard enough? Were the players fit when they started playing the pre-season friendlies?
But they were good against
they were excellent,
the competition,
yeah.
for example.
Yeah, but
so
they
might, something
but,
dropped
but,
in between.
Yeah. I think the mentality for that Community Shield game was absolutely excellent. That's what you expect from Liverpool.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's true.
And I think it was helped that it wasn't played at Wembley. It was played at Leicester's ground.
Yeah.
The crowd were close to the pitch. So the crowd were right behind them. They played with that intensity.
Yeah, yeah, they did.
And they were able to do that. Whether that didn't help them because they, you know, one or two players got injured after that. One or two players probably weren't quite fully fit to play at that intensity when they've started the league season. Defensively, I think they've been all over the place at times.
I think the Fulham game away, they took that lightly, really. And it took them a good 45 minutes to react, come back, and in the end they got a draw, be lucky. I think the Crystal Palace game, they started well. They had 20 very good first minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
They could not score. And then the Zaha goal on the counter, should all like, you say cut the grass under their feet? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
kind of stuff. And after that, I think it's difficult to get back in it, even if they did with the Luis Diaz goal. I think the defeat at United, where for me, Robbo, United clearly played it long to beat their press, not get too exposed, then won the second balls and then defended with their heart out. They showed so much character. United had 30% of the ball, Liverpool 70. Liverpool didn't really know what to do. I thought Klopp should have had a plan B when clearly the press didn't work because there was nothing to press because they were playing long.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They didn't know what to do. And to me, they looked a bit lost. So then we can come on to Klopp. How much this poor start of the season is done on him? There's this theory that seventh season for him are bad. Yeah. At Mainz, it was bad. At Dortmund, it was bad. And this is his seventh season at Liverpool. I don't believe in all of this.
No.
But maybe after a certain time, maybe even his message gets a bit tiring for the player, all that intensity, everything.
Well, I went to a school that the headmaster was only given 5 years.
Yeah.
That was their policy. We only give you 5 years, whether you're good or you're bad. You get 5 years, because after 5 years, the message starts to wear thin. Mm. So they get somebody else in. Now, I'm not saying Liverpool need to get somebody else in. There's two ways a manager revitalizes things. He either changes himself, you know, and changes what he wants to do, which I don't think Klopp's going to do because he's got a certain way of playing. Or you change the players, or you gradually change the players. So those players are hearing a new voice to them, which obviously with Mane going and one or two other players going, you know, there are some new players, but maybe not enough. He hasn't refreshed it quite well enough over the last two or three years. I'm still sure that Liverpool would do quite well.
Yeah.
But at the moment, they look like a side that are just lacking intensity. They're lacking guidance. when they don't win the ball back early, and he's got to work on that back four. You cannot gamble on playing offside as they're doing at the moment. And he's got to make his mind up about Alexander-Arnold. You know, I'll say it. He does not want to defend. The goal against Fulham, where he ducked out of a challenge against Mitrovic, that's just not good enough. The goal, the first goal, when he doesn't recover, and then he's walking and at the last minute thinks, oh, this is danger.
Yeah.
Van Dijk doesn't want to close the ball down when he's got his hands behind his back, you know, when the ball's only 5 yards away from him. That has to change. They're things that Liverpool didn't do when they're successful.
No, I think you're right. We will look also into the transfer window, because should they have bought a midfielder, considering Thiago's injury records, to put it that way, the fact that Milner is getting older, Henderson is getting older, Oxlade Chamberlain is always injured, Naby Keita, we're not sure, and then there's the youngsters. So maybe less on the money on Darwin and more into a midfielder. We will look into that and more onto the Gab and Jules podcast. So make sure you listen. To be fair, Robo, I've said it on the show before. I get the Darwin Nunez signing. You know, they wanted a striker like him. They were very impressed with him when they faced him in the Champions League with Benfica. I get it. He's young. I think they've overpaid. And my theory is that Julian Ward, who was taking over Michael Edwards as the sporting director, almost wanted, this summer was very important for him because it was his first one as the number one. And I think he wanted to make a statement in a way. Yeah. And because he worked at Benfica before, he knew them well. He went in. At that time, the situation was a bit of a kind of a deadlock. He went in and fair play to him, made the deal happen. All great. Everybody was praising him. Darwin this, Darwin that. No problem. I think they overpaid.
Yeah.
But maybe that was always going to be the case. But more importantly, I think some of that money that they spent on Darwin, that maybe they could have spent on another striker, or maybe could have gone Darwin for less money, I don't know, could have been very useful on the midfielder. There was a point where they were looking at Tchouaméni, where they were looking at Bissouma from Brighton.
Yeah, yeah.
That only cost 25 million.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't have that money then because the 100 million went on to Darwin. Do you see what I mean?
Absolutely, because if you look at their midfield, that's still, they needed a centre forward. There's no question about that. Firmino is not the player he was two or three years ago, and he's not so effective.
And we see that now that he plays.
Yeah, and he's not as effective anymore. The midfield with Milner and Henderson, you know, they've both done a great job for Liverpool. Henderson, you know, is a good leader and he does a lot of good things, but he's not the talent of some of the top midfield players in the Premier League. Milner, you know, has been a great workman for the side, and he's a good player. He can do both sides of the game, but he's still not going to be the tops. He can play with other players that have got great skill, like Thiago. When he's playing at his best, he controls the midfield with his passing, and the other players can work around it. When Thiago's not playing, then there's got a problem. Who's going to be the creative player? You know, who's going to be the one that's going to pick out those exceptional passes? Who's going to be the one that's going to play around pressure and get away from challenges? That's when Liverpool have got a problem. So that's maybe where the money could have been spent wiser.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think James Milner can start a game like the one against United on Monday night. I think he can do a good job for the last 15 minutes, 20 minutes, maybe play in some of the domestic cups. But I was amazed that he started that game. I don't know if Fabinho was not well. I didn't think there was a problem with Fabinho, but to put Fabinho on the bench for a game like this, and very early on when you saw that they were playing, that United were playing long balls and you had to be strong on the second balls, and no one from Liverpool were winning them, and Fabinho is sat on your bench, I'm like, come on. But I do think that in midfield, there's a problem that they can only now address between now and the end of the transfer window. But again, I don't think there's money left. Or maybe in January, but Naby Keita, not sure what's happening.
He obviously doesn't fancy him that much. He thinks he's a decent player, but he's not a player that he can rely on week in, week out, and he's not one that he wants to play. So, Naby Keita, I think, would be better off for himself
at some point. Such a shame,
because when he came, having seen him play in the Bundesliga, he looked like a magnificent player. He could do everything he wanted of a midfield player.
Completely.
But he hasn't had that at Liverpool, and I think his confidence has been knocked. He doesn't feel as though he's one of the top players at Liverpool because he doesn't get picked every week. So his confidence has gone, and he's not the player he was when he was playing in the Bundesliga.
And then there's Harvey Elliott, who has a lot of talent, who was a winger before that club. He's kind of making into a midfielder, which I think is not a bad idea. But again, he's not ready for those kind of battles like the one we saw at Old Trafford for those kind of games.
He's a talented player.
Yeah, but especially with Milner and Henderson next to him. I mean, I think that midfield three was the less sort of compatible, complementary than the one they could have made. And he shows again, oh, when I you look at Liverpool's bench on Monday, it's not the kind of bench that a club like Liverpool should have for a game like this.
No, absolutely not. And I think they probably underestimated how Manchester United were going to play and what sort of spirit they were going to have. I think everybody thought that Manchester United, having seen the first two games, the crowd baying for blood outside the ground, that Manchester United were going to be a nervous side. Well, they got their tactics absolutely right.
They did.
And Klopp didn't get his tactics right or didn't adjust to what Manchester United were doing. And you have to say that about the defenders as well. They must have seen how Manchester United were going to play and kept hitting balls in behind them. Why didn't they adjust and drop off rather than gamble on playing offside?
I agree with you. I think, just to go back on Klopp quickly in that seventh season syndrome, I don't think, I'm like you, I think Liverpool will come good and will finish top two like we expect them to be. But it'd be very interesting to see what he does to stop this rot. I mean, it's Bournemouth at home this weekend. So if they don't win that, I mean, you know, and if we see the same issues again defensively, in the lack of intensity, if Salah again is not really into the game, like he wasn't against Fulham, like he wasn't against Palace, like he wasn't really against United. No. I know he scored against Fulham and there was the assist. He scored against United. But this is not the Mo Salah that, with the new contract, we expected him to be and carry the team.
You're not telling me he's going to be an Aubameyang.
No, I don't want him to be. And he's a bit younger, to be fair.
Yeah, true.
But did we underestimate the loss of Sadio Mane?
Absolutely. I think we've all done that. We all thought that, you know, we talked about Salah and they had to sign him. And, you know, if they're going to lose one player, Mane was probably the best player at realising when the ball was changing hands. You know, when he did a lot of work defensively, he half came back ready to challenge the fullback or the wide centre half if he was coming forward. But as soon as Liverpool won the ball back, he would sprint for the first 15 yards. And how many balls did they knock over the top for him to run onto in playing that percentage football? He was a great counter-attacking player. He epitomised everything that Liverpool were about and what Klopp's about. So he's a massive loss. Diaz, yes, is a great talent and he's settled in really well, but he's going to be a player that's going to come short and get on the ball and then run with it and do different things. Jota is more like Mane with his movement in terms of trying to run in behind the opposition, and it's a shame for Liverpool that he's injured, so they can't change things.
No, and injuries, I think, as we said earlier, is part of the problem and part of the solution. Once you get back Matip and Konate and you've got more depth defensively to do what you want, we will talk about training a bit because I can see your eyes already. Once Thiago Alcantara comes back in midfield, for example, and maybe Naby Keita and everybody is fit or nearly fit, then you've got more options too. And then up front, I think this team, we all love Bobby Firmino and did a great job. And he was such a different type of forward and striker that we all love watching him play. But he's getting older and clearly has less rhythm and intensity in his game and is less influent, really.
Because whenever you preview in a game that Liverpool are playing in and have done over the last five, whatever years, you would say, I'm not sure the opposition can cope with their intensity. I'm not sure the opposition can play around their pressure. I'm not sure the opposition are going to be able to cope with the runs of Salah and Mane. When you look at these first three games, they have been able to. And there hasn't been that level of athleticism that we've seen from Liverpool in the past.
And I think Mane is a pressing machine. And I think of all the front three, whether it was with Jota and Salah, or with Diaz and Salah when he was playing centrally, or even Firmino and Salah, I think he was the one really that triggered the press, that was the most aggressive in the press, that was the more efficient in the press, and losing him. Diaz can run a lot and, you know, all of that. But doing a press efficiently takes a lot of thinking and a lot of practicing. And I don't think Diaz is at that level yet as well.
If you go back to the FA Cup semi-final, when Man City, in that first 20 minutes, 30 minutes, when Man City were trying to play out from the back and the goalkeeper was inexperienced, the goal Stefan, and he won the ball back and scored his goal. That was Mane at his very best. Yeah. He was magnificent that day.
No, you're right. Okay, so now, sorry Liverpool fans, but this was quite grim. Although we said they would come good, what are the solutions now going forward? So we said this is Bournemouth this weekend at Anfield, which is the perfect way really of like steadying the ship, finally kickstart the season, get a win, and then try to forget about the first three games of the season. Mm-hmm. So what for you are the solutions? What would you do?
Klopp has to go to the players, certain players, and say, what made you an outstanding individual over the last 4 or 5 years? What has made you, everybody talk about you? You know, say, for instance, Van Dijk, that you're going to be winning every ball in the air. Yeah. You're going to be making interceptions. When the ball's played in behind you, you get back and show good pace. You're calm in possession, but you don't take risks. You know, that's not what he's doing at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, he's not closing down. He's playing at half pace, I would say, or three-quarters pace. And once any Liverpool player plays at three-quarter pace, they're not the same team or the same player. So they've got to get back to that intensity, yeah. You know, and that's what Klopp has got to get across to the players. We've been successful because this is the way we play, and we play it very well. You can't drop your standards or your intensity, otherwise we might be in trouble.
Defensively, would you drop any of that back four? I mean, I think Robertson, even if Mane played the half of last season at the number nine or for number nine,
yeah.
And Diaz played ahead of Robertson, I think Robertson is struggling without Mane.
Yeah,
I think him and Mane on the left-hand side were so good and could play with each other, their eyes closed and the way they defended as well. I think Robertson is struggling too.
Yeah, I would say when I watch Robertson at the moment, he's not playing with the same confidence or the enjoyment. You know, he used to charge forward and he used to think, you know, look at that. He's playing with such enjoyment. Now it looks as though his body language isn't quite the same.
Yeah.
I think he can play with Diaz. I mean, Diaz loves to come in from the side on his right foot.
They together,
can play the ball infield, and Robertson will carry on his run outside and he'll get crosses in. You know, he's still an excellent player.
Yeah.
There's something about him that he's not quite right at the moment. And I've always got a problem with Alexander-Arnold, you know, because I'm unfortunately a glass half empty. And if I'm putting out a team and I think I've got a right back who doesn't want to defend and can't defend and has no, and I don't think I'm speaking accent, has no idea about positional play, I'm not sure I could put him in the team. I'd have to play, if I was Liverpool manager, I'd have to play him as a right wing back and play with three centre halves because I couldn't allow my right back to be so negative when it comes to recovery runs. You know, and the it's inexcusable. The goal against Fulham, when the cross comes into the box, you cannot, as a fullback, duck and allow Mitrovic to beat him in the air.
You always put your money on Mitrovic winning the header, though,
yeah,
right?
Of course. But he's got to back in and make it difficult for him.
Yeah.
He ducked and almost said, oh, I don't really want to head this.
I've got more issues with the Sancho goal on Monday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this, for me, if I was Klopp, and I think you're right, but you're a bit harsh on Trent in the sense that I think he can defend one-on-one. Okay, I think sometimes he lacks maybe the motivation for it, and we see that on the Sancho goal because otherwise he would not be just literally trotting when the danger is there and he doesn't do anything. And now you're shouting at the TV saying like, what are you doing? Come on, this is not acceptable as an attitude, as a behaviour for a Liverpool defender when United are about to score a goal.
You say he's good in 1v1 situations.
He's better than people say he is. I think people are saying he's rubbish.
I would say I'm surprised when he wins a one-on-one battle. I watched him when Inter played Liverpool. I always thought Liverpool were, although Inter played okay and sort of got through the game, Inter were playing at 100% and Liverpool could play at 75% and still be a match for them in the San Siro. The one area that I thought that Inter would keep having joy was when Perisic got in a 1v1 against Alexander-Arnold and he went past him four or five times and got crosses in. And it was the only area of the pitch where I thought Liverpool might struggle.
I get you.
But, you know, don't get me wrong. He's a wonderful passer of the ball, a great cross of the ball. But if your position is right back, you have to do two parts of the game. You have to get forward and get crosses, but you also have to defend. And if you don't defend, you're a liability to your team.
No, and I think more and more teams are targeting him. And we saw that with Elanga on Monday night. We saw that last season. Remember City where attacking on his side and Cancelo was playing really high, so there could be two against one where he struggled even more than 1v1. Yeah, yeah. It's quite clear that he prefers attacking than defending. Mm. Okay, I give you that. I still think that people are quite harsh on his defending because I still think that you don't get to this level if you're not
of course.
A good defender. But I think the problem is that before, his issue was just, compensated by how good Van Dijk was and how good the Van Dijk Matip or the Van Dijk Konate partnership was, and or even Robertson. Yeah.
And they also had the midfield player that would say, okay, the right-sided midfield player, so Henderson.
Yeah.
I'm going to, as soon as Alexander-Arnold gets into those areas, I'm going to be covering his position. When they lack maybe a little bit of energy and fitness and determination, and they don't make those runs in behind Alexander-Arnold, then he's exposed. And we were talking off air. Liverpool need that intensity because when they didn't have the crowd at Liverpool, mm-hmm. when COVID, they lost 6 home games on the trot because there wasn't that extra yard to go and close the ball down. And once you don't have that extra yard, you get played around. And that's Liverpool's problem at the moment.
We expect a reaction on the weekend against Bournemouth, right? They should win that. You expect different attitude. Mm. You think that club this week is, you know, has like sort of battered them, and that he, maybe even himself, like kind of like reassessed his decision.
He will have analysed the games and he'll say, look, we could have got tighter there. We could have done that better. We could have done that better. Maybe we're not. We don't see the training. He might think, I've overtrained the players, so
maybe,
they're tired.
Maybe.
He might say the other way, well, I haven't trained them enough, so I need to work them harder to get them up to match speed. Whatever it is, he's got to analyse it with his fitness coaches, with his staff, and say, how do we get Liverpool back to being the brilliant side that they've been over the last 3 years?
Well, I hope he listens to us, because he will have a good idea of what to do, and then we'll see this weekend if it works.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules.
Right, enough Liverpool. What about some quickies, Robbo?
Let's do it, Jules.
Yeah, come on. Manchester United are closing in on a deal for Antony, the Ajax winger. Ajax could receive up to 100 million euros. 100 million euros, Robbo. Is it worth it? Is it worth it?
It's too much money to pay for a player with his experience and not knowing whether he's going to be a top player in the Premier League. His goal record is okay at Ajax. I think he's played 57 league games and he scored 18 goals, which for a wide player isn't a bad return. He's obviously assisted on a lot of goals as well.
Crazy.
He's got a lot of trickery. He's a left-footed player that likes to play on the right-hand side, which so many players do now. He's obviously a player the manager knows well and knows, so he knows he can fit into his tactics that he wants to use. Is he going to be an outstanding player for Manchester United over the next 2 years? Is he better than Sancho? I'm not sure that's the case. Sancho, you know, when he came, everyone expected he was going to be a top-class player. Does it say that he's given up with Rashford as a wide player? Because Rashford in the first couple of games and most of last season wasn't particularly good.
Yeah.
Antony, I think, is a good player. He's played for Brazil. He's a couple of goals in 9 games. He's a certain style of player. He'll chop it onto his left foot and he'll get crosses into the box, he'll get shots away. It's a gamble, a big gamble, because the Eredivisie, as much as Ajax are a very good side, it's not at the level of many of the other leagues in Europe. So is he gonna be able to do it in the Premier League?
He will have to step up.
He's going to have to step up.
Yeah, and we will see if he can do it or not. I think it's exciting.
Exciting,
a lot of people would pay to watch Antony because of all the skills and the trickery that you mentioned. It's a lot of money and maybe we should put that money aside. This is what you pay. They're paying that because they're a bit desperate.
Yeah.
And they could not get him earlier for less money. And Ajax are hard to deal with.
Is he going to be the difference between Manchester United being a team at sixth place or a team being in fourth place? I'm not sure that's the case. We'll have to see. Now, another English club and another crazy deal, Jules. Isak is going to go to Newcastle.
Yeah, that's a big one because Antony, we kind of expected they've been chasing him and the Ten Hag Antony link is clear. For Newcastle and Isak, I have to say, I didn't see this one coming for 75 million euros, which is a lot of money. Again, not as much as the 100 million, but
do you think he's been on their radar for a while, or is this just something, oh, he might be available for us now?
But if he had been, they would have signed him in July. He could have done all the pre-season with them. He would have started the Premier League, not arrived now with his big price tag, with expectation on it, although they started well the season. So I guess it's easier to arrive and integrate into a winning team, or like, you know, a team that's doing well, than a team in crisis already. I'm just not sure. Well, I don't think, again, he's worth that.
Is he any different to Wilson?
I think he's not a target man, although he's got the size of it, because he's a tall kid. But I think with the ball, he's good. Technically, I think he's a decent player. I would play him more as a second striker than on his own up front in a 4-3-3, for example, because I don't think he can hold the ball up that well and be in the challenges and be strong enough for that. But it's a bit like Anthony. I'm excited. I want to see him in the Premier League and see if he can step up. He might not be able to, and he would be a 5-7 goal a season player, which is not enough.
He's a 1-in-3 man, I think.
In Spain, he was. But I think Spain suited him more than English football. I'm not really sure the intensity of English football and the physicality of it.
And if Newcastle United supporters see him at 6'3", think he's going to win loads of headers and score goals.
Yeah,
he didn't score one header last season. No, he didn't score one goal with his head last season. I think three the season before. Yeah. So it's an interesting one.
A big challenge for him as well. Yeah. But in a way, I like the fact that Newcastle thought...
Okay, and he's 22.
He's young and room for improvement.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not bad. It was a historic night on Wednesday, Robbo, for Rangers in Eindhoven.
I never thought I would see it again. Rangers and Celtic in the group stages, because I thought Scottish football was dying a death. And when I saw Rangers last, even though they got to the final of the Europa League, every time I watch them play, I'm thinking, well, the crowd have got them through that one and they've been hard working, and maybe tactically Van Bronckhorst got it absolutely right on that occasion and the players worked their socks off. They can't do that on a regular basis. But they've just got a performance out of somewhere, because PSV were you look at the two sets of players
and
by far the better team. So it's an outstanding night, an outstanding tie for Rangers. Good luck to them. Good luck to the manager. There are going to be some great atmospheres in in Europe this season with Celtic and Rangers there. It's a great night for them.
Yeah, it was.
Now, we're talking about Rangers and Celtic.
Yeah.
They will both be in the Champions League draw today with all the other big European clubs. What would be your dream draw?
I mean, for PSG point of view, as easy as possible, I want to avoid Liverpool in the pot two or Chelsea. I want to avoid Inter Milan in pot three.
Well, surely you'd want Liverpool the way they're playing at the moment.
I guess. Yeah. But they would become good by the time they play PSG and then beat us, and then I'd be gutted. But I guess... From pot one are all the champions plus Eintracht Frankfurt, who I think are the weaker side really of that pot one. Then in pot two, you have Liverpool and Chelsea and Barcelona, for example, those kind of teams. But a team like Sevilla, I think, is affordable if you want, if you're looking for the weakest side maybe in that pot two. Then in pot three, Inter and Napoli are the two big ones. There's Dortmund and teams like that. But pot three, if
Napoli
you avoid
doing
Inter,
quite well at the moment.
Yeah, if you avoid Inter and Napoli, I think it's a good draw for you. And then pot four, maybe you avoid Rangers or Celtic for the atmosphere. But if you get Maccabi Haifa, for example, or those kind of teams, again, I think it's a good draw. I'm more worried for Marseille, who are in pot four, who can easily have Real Madrid, Liverpool, Inter, and them, which would be a magical night at the Velodrome.
Because Marseille have had some terrible nights, haven't they, in Europe over the last
3 points in the last 36 in the two seasons they were in. So, good luck to all the teams in the draw and your teams as well. We wish them all the best.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Robbo, let's go for more quick hits. Nicolas Pepe will join Nice on loan from Arsenal. like me and Pepe himself, do you feel a bit frustrated that it didn't really work out for him at the Emirates, or you've got no sympathy?
No, I feel frustrated for him. When he first joined and I looked at the way he played in Liga, I thought he was going to be an excellent signing. Yeah. Everything you want from a wide player at the time. He could score goals. He could run beyond people with the ball. He looked energetic. It just hasn't worked out for him. He had a bad start and he never really recaptured that form we saw in Liga. So it's a shame for him.
Yeah, it was a tricky time to arrive as well with everything the club was going through. I mean, the last time he was in Ligue 1, he scored 22 goals and 11 assists.
Well, let's hope he does that again. He'll come back and he'll do well for Arsenal again.
Yeah, let's hope that for sure.
Now, West Ham are going all out to get Lucas Paqueta. Yeah. They've made a first offer to Lyon for the Brazilian. What's going on there, Jules?
Yeah, it's a big offer, Robo, around the €15 million for Paqueta, which...
Did they see him play for AC Milan?
They didn't. And Lyon, to be fair, kind of resurrected his career. Mm. They bought him for 20, so he's already it would be a big profit for him. Lyon want more money, though. They want the €60 million, which is their record sell, Tanguy and Dombele to Tottenham. I think this is what they want. I don't know if West Ham right now, it doesn't look like West Ham would increase massively their offer. Maybe they can add a few bonuses and things like that, and maybe they can find an agreement in between. I like the fact that West Ham go for Paqueta. I think in terms of creativity, he's outstanding on his day.
On his day,
there's a problem with consistency at times, and we saw that in the second half of last season where after starting so well, it kind of sort of dipped a bit, his form. But I think West Ham need creativity and he will be a really good signing for them. I just think that they will have to...
Is he a David Moyes player?
Definitely not. But then that's what I said to you the other day. For me, if Moyes starts signing those kind of guys, because he will evolve. His style has to evolve now.
Exactly. Absolutely. They can't just be one-dimensional and say, we're going to play on the counter-attack. They've
so
got
I'm waiting to
go and
to
say,
see. Yeah. Oh. I'm not sure he can do it, but I'm waiting to see because you can't put Paqueta in that team and play like you did the last three seasons. This is not going to work out. Howard Webb has been named as the successor to Mike Riley as the PGMOL boss, so the boss of all referees. Robbo, Riley was pretty bad, but we like Webb, don't we?
Yes, we both worked with him.
Yeah, we did.
We did. I think he was a good referee. I think he's a good character. I think he's sensible. I was critical of him once.
Were you?
Yes, and when he first took up refereeing, he did the Under 20 World Cup and he sent a Polish player off after 10, 15 minutes in the very first game of the tournament. And I was commentated and said he was completely wrong and didn't understand the game.
Wow.
And he got Mike Riley to ring me up to have a little go at him. So, but I think he'd do a good job. I think he'd do a much better job than Mike Riley.
It's an important role because you'll set the direction and, you know, the way the referee will be in the Premier League. And we said he's been pretty bad, the refereeing in England, for the last two seasons.
But I think he knows how to deal with the press. He knows how to deal with the TV. So that helps him. And he's been a good referee. And he's refereed at the very highest level. Whether he had a good game at the World Cup or not, he refereed the World Cup final. Now, Mauro Icardi finally became a footballer again, Jules. What's going on there?
Well, my joke I keep making, maybe you don't find it funny, but he's been a stay-at-home dad for the last few months because... Football doesn't seem
opposite
to
you then.
Yeah, doesn't seem to be his priority anymore. You know, which I understand he's in a situation of failing or failure at PSG in the sense that he doesn't get into the squad anymore. They don't want to play him. They don't fancy him. They want him out. I think for a long time he was reluctant to go. Now it seems that Galatasaray can offering him something in Turkey that maybe he's ready to go. I guess he can do well in Turkey, like we saw Radamel Falcao doing well. You know, those kind of strikers that, if he gets back to his best, what a finisher he was. The best year at Inter, he was amazing.
But do you think that was just one season at Inter? I did all those games when he was... And they kept on talking about Icardi and I kept on commentating on the game. I'm thinking, come on, I'm waiting to see something. And I never really saw it. So that's... I was shocked when he went to PSG.
No, I know. I think the loan idea at PSG originally was not bad.
Yeah.
Then they made it permanent and I was like, I'm not so sure. Fulham are already out of the Carabao Cup. Yeah, Robo, they still exist, that competition somehow. They are the only Premier League club to have been knocked out. Do we care about the Carabao Cup? We shouldn't on a World Cup year? Why is it still there anyway?
I don't think the very biggest clubs would worry about it. But I'm in football, you only get three chances. If you're a club like Fulham, you get three chances to win something a year.
Yeah.
No, that's true.
You're not going to win the Premier League.
No.
You might do have a good run in the FA Cup. You might win the Carabao Cup. And if you're a professional footballer, at some point you want to win things. Fans want to win things. You can't get knocked out if you're Fulham in the very first round because it kills any good spirit that you've already that's got in true. The first couple of games. So I think it still matters.
Yeah.
Now, sticking with the Carabao Cup, Jules, yes, and as you said, it still exists. The draw for the third round was made. Anything surprising about that?
Well, we had a big game in the third round that I think we'll be playing in November. Man City against Chelsea, which is good. So for all the criticism that I gave the Carabao Cup so far in the show, then I think we'll be all watching City against Chelsea. I think there's another 100% Premier League tie, maybe Spurs, Wolves, something like that. I can't remember exactly what it is. But
come on, I'm going to go back a few years when the Carabao Cup, it might not have been called the Carabao Cup at the time. The best nights at the Emirates Stadium when you and I used to go and sit there was the Carabao Cup nights when they used to play
the kids.
And they used to get tickets for £10. There used to be 60,000 inside the ground. And I always thought they were the best atmosphere.
Yeah.
That you saw the kids develop and it was a great occasion. Can be used in the right way, that's for sure.
I agree with you. You know what? Maybe all the big clubs should play half of their team with kids and then that would give a bit more interest to the competition. Barcelona and Manchester City played a friendly on Wednesday night for charity, which is a bit unusual, let's be honest, when the season started. But he finished 3-3 between two strong sides, to be fair, from Xavi and Guardiola. And Aubameyang scored as well. Do you think Thomas Tuchel was watching, Robbo, and more?
Yeah, I don't think he'd have judged Aubameyang on that game.
It's a nice goal, though.
And he can score nice goals.
Yeah.
Thomas Tuchel knows what he can get from Aubameyang. You know, he had a great relationship with him at Dortmund. We know that he can be an exceptional player. We've seen it at every club he's been at for a short period, or you know, for an extended period, but doesn't keep his consistency. If he can keep his attitude right and do the things that make him such a good player, like running behind, do things at pace, he could be a good signing for Thomas Tuchel.
We said it on the FC show last night, didn't we? We said it depends on what kind of Aubameyang you get. Right now, the valuation of the players is very different. Chelsea are offering €17 million because that's the money that Barcelona need to register Koundé. So they go, hey, here you go. We know you need that money for Koundé. Here it is on the table. Barca is saying like, hang on a minute. It's Aubameyang. He's got another year on his contract. So this season. Yeah. What about you give us €30 million, which I think is too much. So I think this one will get sorted at some point. And I think Tuchel needs a striker. And Aubameyang is a good short-term fix.
Well, he was very short-term at Barcelona.
He was very short-term, 6 months. Although he did okay, 13
he did
goals.
Okay.
It's not bad. But that's why I would expect maybe this one to go through at some point. Maybe not at 30 million, maybe not at 17, maybe somewhere in between. Yeah. But I think for both clubs, it has to happen.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Bernardo Silva started the game like Aubameyang. Was this his last game for Man City, Jules?
I don't think so, Robbo. He did start. As we said, it was two strong teams. But we heard Ferran Soriano and Chiqui Begiristain, to be fair, a few hours before the game, saying that there was nothing for Bernardo, not from Barcelona, not from any other clubs. There was rumours in front that PSG had made an offer, a bid for him, which I was told was not true, for €70 million. He's got a contract until 2025. Even if he maybe wanted to go at some point, right now, no one is putting the money on the table for him. So if you're...
Did he want to go because he thought he's not going to get enough game time? I mean, at times, he's been one of their key players.
Yeah. No, I think he knows he's going to play. I think he just wanted something different. I think he's been now five years. So this is his sixth season at City. I think sometimes the relationship with Pep had been great and sometimes...
Not so good.
Remember last summer, they tried to sell him when he didn't want to go that time. So I can see from his point of view why maybe he thought, you know what, if Barca really come, I'd fancy that. And of course you would. But that offer from Barcelona never really arrived, certainly not to the level
of City. And I couldn't understand why Barcelona would look at him when you because Pedri, Gavi, Busquets, De Jong, you know, they've got players to play in that in all those positions.
I know. So it looks like, I mean, things might change between now and the end of the transfer window next week, but it looks like he's going to stay at City. It's getting tricky for Harry Maguire at Manchester United, Robbo. He could either leave and find himself a new challenge after losing his place against Liverpool, or maybe fight for his place in the team at Old Trafford. If you were him, what would you do?
If it was me, then I would probably react and try and get away, because he's taken a lot of stick. Unfair criticism. Some he deserves.
Yeah, you like him as a defender.
I like him as a defender. No, I like him as a player. I think he, when you've seen him play for England, when you saw him play for Leicester, when you saw him play for Sheffield United, and when he first went to Manchester United, he looked a top quality player. Mm. He was England's best defender. They've been disorganised at the back, which hasn't helped him. Mm. He's been the captain of the side when they haven't played particularly well, so there have been question marks about him being not particularly good leader.
Yeah.
And of course, they leave him out the side, and they go and win and have a great performance. So that makes it even worse for him. My understanding would be also that he's got every chance of getting back in the team, because you can tell me probably better than anybody, Varane will not stay fit.
Yeah, don't start jinxing my boy.
I thought Maguire and Varane would be a top-class centre-half partnership. Yeah. That's what I thought when he first went there. That could make them a top side. But Varane's been injured, and he has been injured when he was, playing for Real Madrid as well. So he's got every chance of getting back in the team.
I guess so.
But if I was him, I'd want to have a new start somewhere else. But I'm not sure who's going to take him.
I don't know. Certainly not on his wages, and depending how much United want. Yeah. Maybe alone. Maybe that's a possibility. Maybe.
Mind you, one centre-half that definitely will be gone is Eric Bailly.
Yeah, that's done. Robbo, he's gone to Marseille on loan with a fee of, I think, £3.5 million, and an option to buy at the end of the season that can, I think, be automatically triggered if Marseille qualify for the Champions League next season and if he plays over 50% of their games. So potentially, I expect Bailly, if he stays fit, to be one of Marseille's strongest players and starter through the whole season. Yeah. So I would expect, I think it's a 7 or 8 million option to buy to be lifted, which I think would be a decent deal for United, because he was a squad player for them. Mm. I don't understand why he never really got his chance. And he was playing one game, then on the bench for two or three, then playing again. Sometimes he would play well. He'd be good. He's a strong, solid
I mean, he's got all the attributes you'd want for a centre. The only thing that I think managers looked at him, particularly Mourinho, looked at him, does he read the game well enough? Is he a bit rash with some of his challenges?
That is true.
So that's that. But I don't think he was given a fair crack of the whip. We don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but it looks as though he should have played a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think it's a good signing for Marseille. Yeah. I really do, and for Ligue 1 too. So let's see how he does in the south of France.
Como Bowl are still fighting to keep their World Cup qualifiers the way they are right now.
Yeah.
Will they win that, Jules, that battle?
Well, it's them or FIFA. I find that really fascinating, Robo. So this, you know the way CONMEBOL qualifications are now.
Yeah.
So you've got one group of 10, and then they all play each other twice, and then the top four are through to the World Cup automatically, and then fifth place plays that sort of playoff with usually Australia or the whoever has finished in the playoff position on the Asian continent. And now FIFA would like a change. They would like two groups of five that play each other twice, and then the top top two qualify directly, and then third and fourth play between them for a place, and then fifth and sixth play each other to then play the qualifiers, something like that. And CONMEBOL are saying, hang on, why would you want to change something that is working well? Everybody's happy. They're the best qualifiers because you've got Brazil, Argentina twice.
And how would you seed those two groups?
I know exactly. Who would go in where? What, it's just a draw? So what, potentially you can have...
All the best teams in one group and then they'll get to the World Cup.
Exactly. So it doesn't make any sense. CONMEBOL have voted for their qualifier to stay the way it is in their committee.
Yeah.
FIFA are putting pressure now for them to change it.
Who's going
to
win though?
CONMEBOL has to win.
You're voting for them, aren't you?
Vamos, CONMEBOL. Exactly. Callum Hudson-Odoi wants to leave Chelsea. Not much playing time for him right now. And Bayer Leverkusen seems to be the club ahead of everybody else to sign him. There's a lot of clubs ready to welcome Ötun Hodoy, do you think it would be a good deal for both parties for him to go to Germany in the Bundesliga and Bayer Leverkusen?
Yes, we've seen a lot of English players go to the Bundesliga, particularly wide players, and do a good job. And Hudson-Odoi is a talented boy. He's got pace, he's got trickery, he can score a goal. Again, the managers at Chelsea, have they trusted him fully? No. What is his best position? Did they've tried to play him at a wing-back, they've tried to play him as an out-and-out winger, they've tried to play him off the front. I'm surprised he hasn't had more chances, but when you play for a club like Chelsea or, you know, Liverpool or Manchester City, every time you come into the team, you've got to play well. Otherwise, you get left back out again. And a player of his quality needs to play week in, week out. Hopefully, at Bayer Leverkusen, he does, and it's good for everybody.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised that he didn't stay in England. I think there were enough suitors here to stay in the Premier League. Maybe just even to impress Tuchel and to say, look, you let me go, this is what I can do. A bit of a Jesse Lingard type of loan or transfer or whatever. But Bayer Leverkusen, this Champions League, it's a team that started...
But the problem is Jesse Lingard went to West Ham and did really well. But when he went back to Manchester United, they still didn't play him.
That's very true. Although it's not the same age and I guess not exactly the same profile. But if it's Bayer Leverkusen, good luck to Hudson-Odoi.
Now, the Ukrainian league has started, and already one or two stories, particularly in the game between Lviv and Metalist Kharkiv. What happened there, George?
Yeah, you're right, Robo. I mean, I think it's great that football has started and given
no crowds.
Hope. No crowds, though. They've got quite a strict protocol, including that the players can go into shelter in case there's risk of a Russian attack or something like that. And that's why this game lasted over 4 hours, Robo, because a few times the players had to interrupt the game, go into shelter. I think they spent 130 minutes all in all, or 140 minutes, like protecting themselves in case there was something. In the end, there was no airstrikes or anything.
Is that because they alarm, were warned they might
miss? There was the alarm. So up, the game was stopped. They go in, then they come back out. I mean, I don't know how you can play football, but again, it brings hope and I understand it.
Yeah, yeah.
But from a player's point of view, it's not ideal, but at least they're back playing. Mm. There was no problem into that game apart from, you know, the fact that they had to go into holding and shelter. But I'm glad football is back. I just wish, like all of us, that it would be in different context and different situations. Finally, Robo, I know it was a while back at the weekend on Saturday, but what did you make of PSG's first goal against Lille last week, which was an absolute beauty for me?
Well, it was a beautiful game as well for PSG.
It was, I mean, when you
look at the goals and the way they played. Well, it's very simple. They pass it back, a little bit of a setup play. Mbappe gives Mbappe a chance to make his run. But you can only be successful if the opposition allow it to be successful.
Yeah,
first of all, they didn't really put any pressure on the ball. And the two centre halves can't see, you know, one of the best players in the world make a run beyond them. They're walking up the field and just allowing to run in behind. Then the goalkeeper gets caught in no man's land.
Yeah.
Great from PSG's point of view, and that set the tone for the game. But really, defensively, Lille all over the place.
And not that easy to do, because we saw United trying it at the start of the second half against Liverpool and saw failing. And well done to Bournemouth, to Cliftonville, I think I looked, and somewhere else in Holland who did that goal. And PSG just copied them. You know, it was nothing that they invented. So well done to them. Let's see if they can maybe do it again. You know. Well, but that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for coming in and joining
me
for the show. We'll be back on Monday to review everything that happened for the weekend, to see if Klopp listened to our show. In the meantime, as Gab always say.
But you're going to say it wrongly, aren't you?
I always love the game. Love yourself, love your neighbor.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.